Welcome to the Living Waters Church Podcast.
Good morning to you. How are you?
Great.
Anybody doing other than great? Okay, we'll leave it at that. Oh, we have a woohoo. Okay, well, there you go. Good to see you. If we've yet to meet, my name is Luke. I'm on our pastoral team. And we're going to spend some time in the scriptures together listening to Jesus' words, words that we heard read for us by Victoria during our set. Dave made mention just a few moments ago that as a church, we're focusing and listening to these particular words from Jesus for the whole month of January. You might know that we've just entered our 80th year as a community, and we're marking the year by entering in and reflecting on our name, Living Waters, and where that name kind of carries us together. So we're spending January in John chapter 7, and we're listening to Jesus' words about thirst. We're listening to Jesus' words about what it is to live a life of faith. And we're listening to Jesus' words about something that he calls living water, which for some of us is clear, and for others of us is mysterious. And for some of us, we think we're clear, but actually it's going to get more mysterious the more we go. It's going to be a fun journey. Last week, Dave shared, and we concentrated on the reality of what Jesus describes simply as human thirst. It's an idea and an image that we might be used to now, but it originates with Jesus, in a sense, in the way that he is speaking about it. So last week, we talked about human thirst. This week, we're reflecting on Jesus' invitation, as we heard read for us earlier, to come and drink. Come and drink. So we're in 2020, and New Year's Eve has come and gone. That was ancient history, right? It was 2 weeks ago. But if you think back to your New Year's Eve, some people's New Year's Eve is all about the three L's: laughter, libation, libido. Right? So you start looking around the room as the clock gets closer to midnight, thinking about who you're going to plant one on. For other people, though, New Year's Eve is a little less lively. It's about the three B's: book, bed, box of wine, if you're really classy. My New Year's Eve was all about candles and rain. So there was a power outage in part of Fort Langley in Kwantlen, and we were on our way home, Sarah and I, from the grocery store, and half the village went dark. And elevators tend not to work when the electricity goes out. And so the stroller and the groceries and the baby all had to be hauled kind of upstairs to our third floor apartment. And once we got inside, it became all about finding the flashlights and lighting the candles and waiting, really in relative quiet, for the power to switch back on and for all those gadgets to beep alive again. You know all those sounds you hear when the electricity comes back on. I say that we're waiting in relative quiet because of the downpour that was going on that night. And if you're in the area, you might remember it. It had rained all day, and it showed really no sign at all of slowing down into the evening. And we live on the top floor of our building, and we're very much aware on nights like that of how much rain is coming down, because our building is a flat-roofed building. And when you hear that much rainfall living on the top floor of a flat-roofed building, you begin to start wondering when it's all going to come gushing through some kind of unknown crack or unnoticed crack that you hadn't seen before and pour onto your head. And you start this kind of internal inventory of how many buckets do we have? Do we have one bucket even? Or it would just be a lot of kind of Tupperware everywhere, all over the place. So our night was full of candles and rain, flickering lights in the dark, and torrential water. And I couldn't help but thinking, as we were entering into the new year, aware that we were going to be spending time in John's gospel together, of how fitting a night it was to be thinking about candles and rain. If you spend any time in John's gospel, which is Jesus or John's take on Jesus' life, we begin to notice two really prominent images that are put hard at work. And that is a sense of steadily growing light and rushing water. Light and water. And it's no wonder that John leans so heavily on these two images, as they're elemental to human life. They're elemental, indeed, to planetary life. You don't need a biology in or a PhD in biology or botany to know that without light, life isn't possible. And when we lose power in this day and age, in this neck of the woods, we're relatively inconvenienced. But the primal need for light runs much deeper. And so the light plays this starring role in John chapter 1, which draws from Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, John says that the light comes first, and then the rest of creation follows. So in John chapter 1, Jesus is set up as the light who comes first, the light who makes new creation possible, who makes new life possible. Light means life. And the same goes for water in John's gospel. We've been reminded recently of our need for water in hearing about the reports of the Australian bushfires, and perhaps even hearing about the devastating drought that's going on in Zambia, which gets less attention in the news cycle but is affecting 2 million people. Water also means life. So in John's gospel, as these themes come through, we find this being made very clear for us. Jesus' first miracle in John's gospel is when he turns water into wine at a wedding. And at Jesus' crucifixion, it's water and blood that come gushing out of Jesus' side on the cross. And in part, this is why John's gospel makes so much use of both images for Christ. For John, Christ radiates life. Christ bleeds life for us all. So what comes through for us in John is a sense that these two elemental images are dynamic and crucial, and these two elemental images stand for Christ, who is dynamic and crucial for human beings, not to mention creation as a whole. And John drives at this point that we're unable to miss over and over again in his poetic language. Life is not possible without life or light and water. Think about Jesus like that. Life is not possible without light or water. Think about Jesus like that. The invitation then from Jesus to come and drink that we heard read for us reaches into the very depths of our humanity. And it's what we might describe, this invitation, as universal and unique. Universal and unique. First, it's a universal invitation. When Jesus stands up and announces publicly, "If anyone is thirsty, come and drink," it seems he actually means it. I recently heard someone say that at Christmas, we're dealing with a God who doesn't have to be persuaded to be interested in us. And the same sentiment is true of Jesus' words here. But often so muddied and muddled are our thoughts about God that we're not always sure that Jesus really means what he says, or perhaps that his words even apply to us. We convince ourselves, or other people do a good job of convincing us, that God mustn't be interested in me. God mustn't be inviting or drawing me. And so we hear words like these from Jesus, and the tendency might be to skim them like we would spam email. We assume we're reading someone else's content for someone else's eyes only, not ours. But if everything that we just heard at Christmas is true, that God welcomes all people, that must include you and me. So this offer to come and drink from Jesus is one that counters and negates all the ways in which we disqualify ourselves from trusting and knowing God. If anyone has ears, says Jesus elsewhere, let them hear. As we heard last week, St. John records Jesus' invitation to come and drink at something called the Festival of Tabernacles. And Dave told us all about that. If you missed the sermon, listen in on the podcast. But in part, that ancient festival celebrated God being found not far away, but among people. That was part of the celebration. And this is what St. John says of Jesus in chapter 1, which correlates very much with chapter 7, that Jesus is God making his home, or in the original language, tabernacling amongst humanity. So it's a little perplexing to me sometimes when we rush out of Christmas so quickly. It's kind of funny that we spend all December singing, oh come, Emmanuel, and then we box Jesus up as quick as we possibly can on December 26th. But John says that Jesus didn't come to visit for a long weekend. God came to be known and to stay. And so the invitation that we hear in John 7 is one of many invitations from Jesus to come and drink. It's to find God among us still. The words, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, which some of you know too well, a word and a song sung by a band called Semisonic, you might not know, at the end of, called Closing Time. It's about a bar closing. Those are not words that we ever hear from Jesus. This is an ever-open invitation. And this is in part what we are remembering at Epiphany. Dave talked to us a little bit last week about the season of Epiphany. It's the season that follows Christmas. At Epiphany, what we remember is a somewhat detached group of people who are invited by starlight to meet the infant Jesus. It's the time of year that we celebrate God's revelation of himself through Jesus, not just to a select group, but even to those that we might think of as remote or removed people. And on a week when the actions of powers and governments seem to be saying that there are some human lives that are remote and removed enough to be snuffed out, some lives detached enough to be discarded, the truth behind Epiphany shines out brighter. The Magi, the wise men, the strangers from the East that we think about during Epiphany, for those people that were sure that God must not be interested in, these people even are drawn, invited into God's ever-expanding life through Jesus. Every human life is equally valued, treasured by God, and drawn in by God's love. And that actually includes you and me as well. So come and drink are these inclusive words. They're universal words. They're for each of us. Secondly, they're unique words. As we said, John is always casting Jesus as the light of the world or the water of life. So in reading John's gospel, we're doused again and again with the impression that Jesus doesn't belong in the categories in which we put the rest of life's contents. For John, Jesus is not just some self-help Instagram influencer. Jesus is not like a bit of paprika to be sprinkled onto life to make it just a little bit better. Christ is true light from which all other light is born. Christ is true water from which all creation drinks. Christ is the very spring of life itself. So when Jesus says to come and drink, to come and trust, the invitation reorients us entirely. When searching for the source of our value, our meaning, our life, God says through Jesus, Come to me for that. Come to me for that. The invitation, then, is one that is bound to evoke our deepest longings, our deepest thirsts as persons, reaching into places that we might not even know exist within us. And it's not only for the needs that we know about. It's an invitation so deep, it reaches into the places we don't know about, as I said, or the places we'd rather not think about as human beings. Like the kinds of needs that we become all too aware of when we face our failure or our mortality. What does come and drink mean? At the very least, it means to trust Jesus and to relate to him as our life's source, center, and nourishment. To trust God with our most essential and overwhelming of human concerns. At the end of the day, where do we think life comes from? Where are we going to sink our trust when we face the darkness and the drought of our failure, of our mortality? What do we do when the things we can't control, when the prognosis is bad, when the marriage falls apart, when we flunk the class? What do we do when that all too familiar temptation slices us open yet again? Where do we turn with our deepest questions and fears? The invitation from Jesus is unique. Jesus himself is unique because he says, "Anyone who trusts me will not be left in the dark, will not die of thirst, will not be left to their own devices. Anyone who trusts me will be trusting, will be clinging to, will be drinking from the source of life." So this is a unique invitation because the offer is to trust without conditions, to learn what it means to repeatedly put all of our eggs in one basket, to repeatedly take stock of life and to ask, where do I think life, nourishment, hope really comes from? And that's why an Instagram influencer Jesus or a paprika Jesus doesn't really help us. When we objectify God as just a tool to enhance life on our terms, we're quickly disappointed. And many of us have been when we operate with God that way, because we're not dealing with the real God. We're dealing with a God that we've made up, a God that can be imported into our life to make it just a little bit better. And when we do that, not only are we not dealing with the real God, we're not dealing with our real selves. Jesus' invitation is to see through him the reality of our dependence on God as life's source. Jesus says, this is who God is. This is how you access God. This is who you are. Remember your thirst. So it's to truly recognize our need for God dependence and to find that God is dependable in life and even in death, which is what Jesus' own death and resurrection actually affirms for us. God is reliable in life. God's even reliable in death because Jesus has come out the other side of it. In other words, we are invited to give God both the things we think we can control and the things that we deep down know we cannot control. There's an American poet named Annie Johnson Flint, and she spent much of her life confined to a wheelchair because of debilitating arthritis. And she wrote lots of poems that were converted into hymns, and one of them says this: "When we have exhausted our store of endurance, when our strength has failed and the day is half done, when we reach the end of our hoarded resources, our Father's full giving is only begun. His love has no limit. His grace has no measure. His power no boundary known unto men. For out of his infinite riches in Jesus, he gives and he gives and he gives again. Thinking back to New Year's Eve and my evening full of candles and rain and concerns about a flat roof and the water pooling and come pouring through the ceiling, it doesn't seem, the more we read about Jesus in the Gospels, that God is like that. The more we learn about Jesus, the more we come to see that God isn't someone who comes crashing through the ceiling unwelcomed. God, in other words, won't waterboard us. In listening to Jesus, we're hearing that God is not an intruder, but an inviter. Christ doesn't gush through where he isn't welcomed, but invites us to trust, to welcome him as our source and our sustenance. So a life of faith takes participation. It's a two-way street. God is not an imposing policy. God is a person. And that person stands up in the midst of other persons and says, "Come and drink." So as we face a new year together and a new decade together, can we hear God standing up today in the middle of this gathering, standing up and inviting trust and reliance? I'm going to be honest, because most of the time I'm lying. It's a funny phrase, isn't it? Let me be honest. Sometimes I think that my job as a preacher is to help us to see the scriptures clearly and to apply them to our daily lives. And sometimes I think my job as a preacher is just to point at Jesus and his words, just to point to the light of a candle, just to invite us to listen to the rain and to ask, who here today needs the light? Who here today needs the water? So who here today needs the light? Who here today needs the water? If that's you, I invite you to stand. And if we're used to standing and we want to say to God that we are in for this participation thing, I invite you to do something else physical. Maybe you want to kneel or open your hands or close your eyes. God's not a policy, God's a person. Invite you to invite him as he's invited you.
What a beautiful sense of living water that's here today. Julie and I were hiking on the North Shore yesterday, and our path that we were on took us to a stream. And I was thirsty. And I was staring at this stream going, oh, to drink of that. I waited to get back to the car for my water bottle. But I just have this picture that us as a community are walking along a path that is leading to a stream. That's actually the gospel. That's actually the Christian journey. But how beautiful to be with a bunch of like-minded, kindred spirited people that are on this path that say, man, I need a drink. I need the life and the love of Jesus. Stir a passion. And thank you for singing that collectively today. What a unifying, glorifying thing for people to sing and pray together. And we pray that this coming week that you would find yourself at a stream. Christianity is not an event, and it's certainly the Christian experience is so much more than this room. Good room to be in, but we don't live here. And how great an invitation we have this coming week to tarry a little longer, to wait a little longer, and to find that there is this stream of living water that flows from the heart of Jesus for you and for your family. And we trust you drink freely this coming week. So God bless you. Thanks for joining us today. Trust you have a good rest of your day. And we look forward to hearing stories this coming week of the good things that God does within our hearts and lives.